Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, I'm in Miami with the Padres. Start of a 9-game trip. We taped this on Tuesday, so start of a 3-game series against the Marlins. Worst team in the National League via record. Jay Posner, my boss, back in San Diego, back from a few days away. I hope you're rested. I hope the Padres are rested, Jay, for their sake, because I will rarely, and I would say almost never, throw this out about a series or a trip or a game in July. But this road trip for the Padres is like must-win territory. What do you say?
I guess it's must win if they're ever going to make a run and show that they shouldn't start selling off a couple of assets, then definitely that's the case. I don't believe this team is capable of making the kind of run they would need to make the playoffs, which I think at this point would basically be like, what is it now, like 42-27, I think they would need to go to get up into the upper 80s in terms of wins. I just don't see that in a team, you know, being 45-48. And then, I mean, just look at their last 22 games, which I did this morning to refresh my memory on this. Starting with that crazy game in Denver on Father's Day, June 16, where they won 14-13. They won 4 games, then lost 3. They won 4 games, then lost 5. They won 3 games, the 3 in L.A. last week, a weekend ago, and then lost 3 this weekend to the Braves. To me, that just doesn't seem like the kind of team that's suddenly going to get on this hot streak and make a run like the Rockies did 10 years ago or something like that. But, as you said, if they are going to do it, it has to start with this road trip. And they certainly have a favorable schedule, at least on the front and back end of it. The Marlins are bad. The Mets are bad. But, you know, I'm sure that those teams probably look at it and say, hey, the Padres have a minus 42 run differential and they're 3 games under 500. You know, how good are they? And I guess, you know, one other thing I'll note, and I texted you this morning because I don't think either of us realized it. The Padres are a game and a half out of second place right now in the NL West. They're also a half a game out of last place. The Giants have been playing extremely well lately. All 4 of those teams, not counting the Dodgers, obviously, who are in another world at this point, all 4 of those teams, 47, 48, or 49 losses. So I think it's just one of those cases where maybe even all 4 of those teams sort of bounce around 500. Are any of them capable of winning the wild card? Yeah, probably 1 or 2 of them could bust out. I just don't see the Padres as that team. But, hey, they got a road trip to you know, prove otherwise and probably prove to their front office that they should keep some of these guys around.
So much to dive into there, but I'm going to start here. No, I did not realize that the Giants had crept up that far. That was a surprise to me. Padres are 2.5 games back in the wild card. Here's one thing I will say about needing, you know, 87, 88, 89 wins. There are so many teams right now bunched up in the NL West and the NL Central that are going to beat up on each other down the stretch that maybe this is the year that 84 or 85 gets there. Probably not, but maybe it is. And as I wrote about,
you certainly have to consider that, no question.
And as I wrote today, looking back, and I like to do this every once in a while with Eric Hosmer, Ian Kinsler, and Eric Hosmer recalled 2013. Now, the Royals ended up lamenting at the end of the year with 86 victories that they were out of the playoffs. Now, the next 2 years, went to the World Series, won it in 2015. But in 2013, they were worse than the Padres record-wise at this point in the season because they were doing exactly what the Padres have done, which is go on streaks, both good and bad, too many bad, and not capitalize when playing bad teams, what the Padres call taking care of business. So here they go to the Marlins, then they have the Cubs, leaders of the NL Central, then they have the Mets, as I said, Marlins, Mets, first 2 records in the National League. Oh, that's nice, except the Padres, and I updated this morning, the Padres are 26-21 against teams at 500 or better. They are 7 games below 500, 19-26 against teams with losing records.
Yeah, that's remarkable. I mean, you talk about playing to your competition or maybe even you're playing up and then playing below the other the other side of it. So what you're saying is they're going to go 1-5 here against the Mets and Marlins and sweep the Cubs or something like that? I don't know.
Would not surprise anyone.
Right. Right.
I mean, it really, you couldn't at this point be surprised. The team that went, you know, took 3 of 4 against the Dodgers and then got swept by the Braves. Now the Braves a winning team. Not actually, the Padres were much better against winning teams before the Braves came in and swept them. Jay, the Padres tonight, I'm a little bummed that Chris Paddock's not going till Wednesday because this kid, Jordan Yamamoto, going for the Marlins. That's the guy they got for Christian Yelich.
Okay. Well, he's probably not at Christian Yelich's level yet, but in 5 starts, 3-0 with a 1.24 ERA, only 11 hits in 29 innings. I did notice he's walked 15 in those 29 innings, 30 strikeouts.
Right, he's a big strikeout walk
guy.
So
he's he's a little bit all over the place, but and probably doesn't figure to be around for more than five, six innings. but
oh, I thought you were going to say it doesn't figure to be around the Marlins for long.
Well, that's probably true as well. But it's funny. I mean, the Marlins have, as bad as they are, they're starting pitching. At least the three guys they're throwing out this week against the Padres aren't that bad. I mean, Caleb Smith, the Padres saw him back in that late May, early June series where the Padres actually won the game that Caleb Smith pitched. But he only gave up 3 hits, 2 runs in 5 innings, struck out 8. Reyes and Renfro homered off of him. The next night, Trevor Richards pitched, who's going to pitch in this series as well. His record is unsightly at 3-10, but his ERA is just over 4. And he pitched really well against the Padres. 5 innings, 1 hit, no runs. Again, another 8 strikeouts. That was the first of those 9-3 wins, I believe.
Yep, pair of 9-3 wins. Yep.
Right.
For
and,
the Marlins.
And one of them was over Mark Gavichis. One of them was over Matt Strom. Neither one, of course, is in the rotation at this point. And then it's funny, the Marlins, talking about, you know, teams are capable of doing anything. They won those 2 games. The next 2 games, they went out and beat the Brewers 16-0 and 8-3. And then they lost 6 in a row. So it's so unpredictable, and that's why we've given up trying to predict what's going to happen in this season. But the Marlins are just, you know, crazy up and down, mostly down, but they have had their moments. They've had a 6-game winning streak this year. They've had a couple of 4-game winning streaks this year. So there's just no way to know what's going to happen. And you mentioned seeing Paddock will pitch on Wednesday. Which, as you wrote today, he's very excited about shoving it up the fish's gills, I think, was...
Though anyone would believe that Chris Paddock said it, imagine that, him being pumped up for something. Padres are embracing that. And, you know, again, it is always in flux what the Padres are going to do with their rotation. But it would also seem to line up that this road trip would feature Chris Paddock going against the Mets again. So that will be exciting.
Right. Yeah, we can look forward to that next week. So, again, a big road trip, as you mentioned, and impossible to predict what's going to happen, but we will see. And by the time this trip ends, then I believe there's only, what, a week? Not even a week till the trading deadline. The last game of the trip is on...
Yep.
Is what, on the
25th? The 25th.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So just 5 days, 6 days before, when they come home and play the Giants on the 26th, we'll be down to 5 days before the trading deadline. So, if they're going to make a little bit of run here and show it, look, it's easy to say they're 2.5 back in the wild card race, which is true. But if you've got 4 or 5 teams that are ahead of you, it's not as easy as just, saying, well, we'll outplay those teams by a couple games, because you end up, so many of those teams play each other that somebody's got to win those games. So they need to go on a run. And I guess this is the trip where they need to do it. But I guess we should get back into what happened this past weekend. I was out of town. I did see parts of a couple of the games, being able to, Kevin, you can watch games when you're not in San Diego. How about that?
How about it?
It's quite a thing. I guess the easy game to cover is Friday, right? They got down early, 3-0. Lamet gave up the early home run. What were your impressions of Lamet and his start?
You know, once again, some really brilliant pitches. This time, the control not quite there. And maybe the, command as well. Command being, where are those strikes for a large part? And maybe that wasn't quite there. And he, made some really good threw some really good sliders, and he pitched some pitches, then he threw a few bad ones that got hit very well. So look, this is a progress coming back where it's like, hey, that's all so awesome. Denelson Lamet's back, and believe me, they are ecstatic. And guys who hadn't seen him before, like Ian Kinsler, wow, this guy can really be something. But let's look, the guy is still working his way back. I think it's about kind of up and down what we can expect of Denelson Lamet. I think what you really want to talk about, and there's so much talk about it, is how Andy Green handled the rest of the series.
Right. And I do want to mention, though, that one thing to remember as I was looking back through this, Reyes and Perdomo both had good innings on Friday night, and so I'm wondering how much that entered into what we're going to talk about in terms of Saturday and on to Sunday. And then Munoz pitched on Friday, and it was pretty clear that he wasn't going to pitch on Saturday. I think that, what was it? It would have meant 3 out of 4 or something like that, that he had.
And he'd never done that. He's 20 years old, not just back-to-back in the majors after, you know, his debut, but he had pitched in Double-A, so it would have been 3 out of 4. So that is really good points because, you know, Reyes, up and down. Perdomo's been really good. Hit a Perdomo patch lately, and then Munoz, and they all pitched really well on Friday, and so there we go. And I will say this once again: there are things you can question, and now it's been 4 days. But I think that Saturday game, it was like there are 4 or 5 things, right? And every single one of them, there's also answers for that Andy Green had in his head. Doesn't mean he pulled the right levers, but there were reasons behind them. And you mentioned, at least one with Andrés Muñoz was not going to pitch on Saturday.
Right, and
but
I think
Jay,
you're
very good at this, so break this down for me. What you
to
thought?
To me, that's the most defensible of all. Is, I mean, you got a pitcher who's young. And there's no reason to push a guy like that in a game like this. So the notes that I made off of that game, they were down 2-0 right away again, Josh Donaldson again. They got it tied in the 5th inning. And in the bottom of that inning, Lucchesi, I think he had thrown 79 pitches.
He had started out so horribly. It was like almost 50 pitches in the first 2 innings.
Okay.
And then like 12, 13, 15, he's going really well. And you're like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen if his spot comes up? Because if his spot comes up, that means they're either ahead or on the verge of.
Right, and so they were 2-2. They had first and third and nobody out. And Andy sent up Josh Naylor. And, I don't know, is that the right move at that point? I mean, Naylor drove in a run, for one thing. So it puts them ahead. But now you've got a long 4 innings ahead with a obviously shaky bullpen. The other alternative is to let Lucchesi go up there in that situation and bunt, because you're not going to have him. I'm sure he's not going to swing away. I mean, he's not a good hitter anyway. So he goes up and bunts, and depending on what happens, you're going to have first and third or second and third if he's successful with it, with one out and the top of the order coming up. I don't know. I mean, is there – I guess the question – and this comes up a lot with these moves and decisions that managers make and that get made in all walks of life, I guess, you know, is there a right or wrong answer in this case to what happened? I don't know. I mean, I can make arguments both ways on this one.
To me, this is the one I could most, for lack of a better word, slam Andy on. The bullpen ones, it's like, oh my gosh, there's so much going on there. And guess what? These guys aren't throwing well as a whole. So, like, really? So, anyway, that one, no matter what Joey does, he can't bunt, not very good at it. He can't hit, even worse at it. You're probably seeding it out.
Okay.
You don't, as you and I talk about all the time, and Andy Green and every manager says, you don't judge a move on the result. So that was it. And usually we're talking about like, hey, we really like that he sent up this pinch hitter. The guy struck out. That's not Andy Green's fault or the manager's fault. This one's the opposite. Josh Naylor hits a sacrifice fly. They take the lead. Yahoo. Guess what? It started a string where you not only had to go turn to your bullpen, and I don't buy that then he didn't have enough guys. Craig Stammen gave up a home run, and that's Craig Stammen's fault. He was almost out of the inning. Kirby Yates didn't get a strikeout when he was able to. He got 3 later. So the problem is Andy Green was out of bench players when this sucker, which you have to anticipate as a manager with your, his reason for putting Naylor in there was his offense wasn't generating anything. He feels like he needed to run when he needed, you know, when he could. Right. Well, for that same logic is, it's going to be a close game. There's a chance my bullpen's going to give up this lead, and I'm going to need players at the end of the game, and he didn't have any. Luis Perdomo had to bat. Not only did Ian Kinsler, I think, have to go in at a certain time, I might be wrong on that, but then Luis Perdomo had to bat with the game on the line, and he struck out to end the game. So no, that, to me, was the one.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And like you said, if Lucchesi had been throwing well for a couple innings there, 79 pitches means you got one, maybe even two more innings to get out of him. And as I noticed today, as I said when I was looking this up, there were no outs in that inning. So even if Lucchesi strikes out, you still have first and third with one out, and Tatis is coming up. And you would hope in that situation that Tatis would be able to drive in that same run that Naylor did, and you would then save Naylor for later on. So now you've got this long game. Stammen gives up. Wingenter pitches an inning, a couple hits, no runs.
Scoreless,
right,
by the way.
Right, yes. Stammen comes in, gives up the home run. They get the lead back. So now you're winning again. You're going to the eighth inning, and now you've got – who are your choices here? You're not going to throw Munoz. So, and this is another thing. If you're going to carry this many pitchers, there's something to be said about carrying that many pitchers and having a short bench. But anyway, you don't have Munoz, so you've got to go to either Reyes or Perdomo or Strom, who had just given up a home run the night before and has not been all that great out of, you know, recently. So, you know, I guess the other alternative is if Yates is in play for six outs, you could make the argument, and I don't like this argument, but you could make the argument, you could just go to Yates right there and say, hey, Kirby, get the two innings. Sure. I don't mind going to Reyes there and trying to steal an out or two outs from him. I guess the question is, if you trust Reyes enough to give him the eighth inning, he walks one guy, and now you're getting him out of there right away. I'm not sure that that's not a little bit of a quick hook. Could he have faced maybe one more guy?
Here's the problem. We're talking about the middle of the order, okay, right? And I know it was a lefty coming up, and he struggled against lefties, and in my mind, it was a good hitter. But regardless, Andy Green has in his mind, I'm sure, and this is great, Jay, because these are totally questionable. They're not like scream on Twitter, Andy Green sucks, but they're you can question them. That's the beauty of it.
Well, for some people they are, but
Reyes has been basically unhittable or awful.
Right.
And so, wait a minute, he goes in and he wasn't close with those pitches. Mm-hmm. Okay. This wasn't like a hard walk here. Okay. So Andy Green has to then, I mean, that in his mind, right, I believe, has to go to Kirby Yates. You can, you know, you said everything needed to be said about that situation.
Well, and I also think then you've got Yates in a situation where, you know, he bails out, or not, I don't even want to say bails out, but he makes the move look good if he gets out of the inning, but instead he gives up a hit. Andy Green didn't give up the hit. Kirby Yates gave up the hit, and then he gave up a sacrifice fly. Now, sure, it's not, he didn't get a clean inning or any of that stuff, but Yates had a chance. I mean, he came in with a runner on first and nobody out. That's not an automatic run type situation there. He, you know, Yates gave up a hit and a sac fly, and I'm sure he would admit that wasn't his best performance there. And then I think having him pitch the second inning anyway, even when the game's tied, I have no issue with that, because now you're in the normal situation where it's the ninth inning of a home game that's tied, so you want your closer out there. And then, you know, the problem is then you go into the 10th inning and you basically got to pick between, what, Perdomo and Strom. And so they go to Perdomo, and he was the Perdomo that we, you know, haven't seen a whole lot of this year, the one who wasn't very good. So they end up where, you know, it doesn't work out, I think, and it ends up where the Braves managed to, they struggled to get that, the final outs, but they were able to get it to a situation where Perdomo, you know, was the last guy, and it comes back to what you talked about earlier, where you've used up your bench already, including in that inning. I think there was at least one pinch hitter, you know, in that inning.
Austin.
And I also saw Dennis Lynn, our friend who now works for The Athletic, wrote something about, there was somebody questioned the double switch and putting in Myers for Reyes, But again, that was done with a one-run lead. And, you know, at the same time, if Stammen had given up a fly ball that Reyes hadn't been able to catch, and everybody would have said, well, why is Reyes in the game with a one-run lead? So I didn't think that was so bad. I don't know. Am I missing anything there?
I think that it can be questioned. Again, I think it can be questioned. But you brought up why we would all be second-guessing Andy Green if there had been a ball that Reyes can't get to. Look, Franmil Reyes is not good out there.
Right.
He's not.
Right.
And so you talk about roster construction, which, by the way, for the most part, don't blame Andy Green for that. All right? He's got input, but that's not his deal for the most mm-hmm. part. There are things that they defer to him on. But you talk about roster construction, and basically you have decided that you're going to have a right fielder who you are going to. It's almost like color by numbers. They're rarely. I can think of one or two times that Andy Green hasn't made that move.
Right, right.
And that is on Andy. But they're basically saying, this is what we're going to do. We're mm-hmm. going to put Will Myers in. He's going to play left, and Renfro's going to go over to right. Guys, it has saved them a few times.
Right.
By doing
right.
that.
And other times, I'm sure it's hurt them. Like, you know, when Myers has to come up and hit. You know, would you rather have Reyes or Myers hitting here? Well, of course, you'd rather have Reyes. But you could also turn the question around and say, would you rather have Reyes or Myers in the field, you know, with a one or two run lead?
And it is one of those things that I am wondering if they start to alter.
Yeah.
As in, you know, keeping Reyes in
right.
there.
Right. Now, let's get to Sunday. I saw very little of Sunday, but Cal Quantrill must have looked very good. Six shutout innings against that lineup. Mm-hmm. Had to be very impressive.
It was, and the only thing that was that they, and that's still six shutout innings, is, you know, the guy was able to go longer because I think he hadn't pitched in 10 days. As the Braves can do, they made him throw a fair amount of pitches.
Right, so 90 pitches after six, I think that's pretty much, you know, going to be a limit for most of these mm-hmm. guys. I mean, Quantrill's got arm surgery in his past, and, you know, Stammen comes back and from the night before and throws a perfect seventh. So now you're in that situation. What are you going to do in the eighth? I am assuming something here, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. I am assuming that they were going to use Munoz as a closer on Sunday.
Yes.
And so that's why we didn't see him in the eighth. So if that's the...
At some point you have to say, and I hope I alluded to that in my notebook out of that game, that he was going to come in the ninth. At some point you have to say, look, we got to get to the ninth.
Right, right.
And use our best guy.
And so, you know, should they have brought in Munoz in the eighth and say, you know, at that point, okay, let's say he gets through the eighth, and then Wingenter is going to pitch the ninth, and he could blow up in the ninth as well. So I don't know that it's a bad move to bring in Wingenter in that situation. And then, again, you know, Wingenter was terrible. That's on Wingenter. He pitched a good inning the night before, and he pitched a bad inning on Sunday. So I think, like most of the time, to me anyway, and I've made this clear many times, to me, most of the time, this is on the players. That's not to say that the manager can't make better moves, because Andy Green has even said a couple times in the last week, yeah, there's some games that are on me. And I think he can make some moves. But at the same time, look at Sunday's game, Kevin. Even after it's 4-1, they get to the last inning, and here's Hunter Renfro coming off the bench with the bases loaded. You know, if he hits a grand slam, wow, what a genius. Padres win. Everybody looks great. So I don't know where, you know, look, I know there's people who can't stand Andy Green. They think this team would be fantastic without Andy Green. I think Andy Green, some of his moves are definitely questionable. Is he the reason that this team is three games under 500 instead of three games over 500? I would seriously question that he would have that much influence. I just think this team is what it is, to steal a quote from somebody from way back. And, you know, another quote that that person would say is, you are what your record is. And I think this team is about a 500 team. That's what people should have expected at the start of the season. I said before, if this was a 500 team at the end of the season, that should be considered a successful season for this team. And I still stand by that. I don't think this team, as it's constructed, is going to be any better, basically, than about a 500 team. Give or take, you know, a couple wins or losses each way.
Would you amend that in any way, Jay, depending on how they get there? Like,
of course,
you know, it starts to get really ugly here or something, and then they're able to somewhat salvage it at the end of the season. Or, you know, is there anything?
I guess it depends on how much do you think a manager makes a difference in everything. I mean, look at the I'll use the Giants because I always love using Bruce Bochy as an example. He's going to the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. He has a losing record. The Giants were awful earlier this season. Now they've won like 11 out of 14, and they're only a half a game behind the Padres. Is Bruce Bochy managing any different now than he was back then, you know, at the beginning of the season? I seriously doubt it. I'm guessing that he's got guys that are playing better. Brandon Crawford wasn't very good for a long time this year. Yesterday, he hit 3 home runs and drove in 9 in a doubleheader. You know, did Bochy manage any better in those games? I just can't be convinced that a manager is going to make a huge difference. Of course he's going to make a difference here and there, but in the end, it comes down to players have to perform or not, or they don't perform.
And it's funny that Andy Green said that, and I think it's true. I mean, you know, back in April, he had made, if you remember, I think 2-3 at least games where it was like every move he made was gold. They were winning those
right,
games, man.
Right. All those one
the relievers run, were shutting yeah. people down. The pinch hitters were getting hits. And it was like, and Andy Green said, I got better players.
Right. I mean, all okay. those one run victories, can't say that when you're talking too fast. You know, was that all because Andy Green was managing great? Well, I mean, if he was if he's managing poorly now, does he and he's blamed for all the losses, does he get any credit for the wins? And, you know, I don't – that's the problem I have when people say, you got to just fire the manager. He doesn't know what he's doing. You know, they've won a lot of games, too, this year. So was he only managing when they lost? I guess that's the issue that I have. That doesn't mean that every move he makes is great. Of course it's not. And sometimes he makes a bad move, and it comes out – he looks great in the end. Sometimes he makes what I think people would say mm-hmm. is a good move, and it comes out terrible in the end. That's just the way it goes when you have human beings, you know, playing this game.
So I think that what we truly took out of this was the hook to Lucchesi was, you know, that's the one that we really kind of buy into. And possibly going forward, how much are they especially with how bad Will Myers looks right now, and there is no sign he's coming out of it. Going forward, how much do they absolutely that's it. We're up 2-1, and it's the seventh or the eighth, and Reyes is out. Let's see. Let's watch that going forward. That's what I took out of that whole deal.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair, and the other part of it is because, and I think you're right, because the Lucchesi lifting Lucchesi earlier led to having to go to Kirby Yates too
yes.
early, and I don't think that's a situation they want to get into too often. I know it's happened a couple. More times recently where they've asked Yates to get 4 and 5 outs. And
why is that, Jay? We've talked about this. Why is that they've relied on Yates so much?
Because there's nobody else. They can't rely on anybody else. And that's the answer for, okay, if you can't rely on everyone else, then maybe let Lucchesi go up there and strike out or, you know, do his best to try to bunt and leave it to, you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. to try to drive in that run. I think that...
Jay, I got one more thing, and it's something off of what you said, and it was about the construction of the bench because of the bullpen. And it makes a lot of sense for this team to have a heavy bullpen. But you know what? You know who has – like, I have to be reminded when I go in the clubhouse, he's still on the team. It's Robbie Erlin, okay?
You know, that's funny, right? Where is Robbie Erlin? If he's not going to be used for basically a whole weekend, right, mm-hmm. then – could you be
and you have coverage with Logan Allen starting tonight yeah. but he's been in the bullpen, right? And they knew that, so they were going to be real, you know, it's like, oh, we're only going to use Logan Allen like if we have to, that kind of thing. And you've got Strom in there who theoretically you would think could still go 2-3
sure.
Or more. You've got Perdomo, he's a 2-3 even guy. And here's the problem, and it plays into, and I don't know that I want to get all deep into this, but why Luis Urias is not here yet, at least part of it is, they aren't sure what to do about, well, Luis Urias comes up, what do we do? Oh, Josh Naylor goes down because Greg Garcia is a really good guy off the bench and has been good in utility. Ian Kinsler, we believe in his work in the clubhouse, and he's actually been pretty good lately. Oh, no, well... wait, you send Josh Naylor down. You don't have any power coming off the bench because unless you consider Will Myers' power, and you you have three infielders. You're going to play Urias virtually every day. What are you doing with Kinsler and Garcia? Like, they have some serious roster construction issues to work out here in the coming weeks.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, the obvious answer you could say as well, send down a pitcher. But that's
exactly what your point was. Right.
So we'll, you know, again, that's coming at some point. I'm sure Urias will be here, I don't know, before I turn 80 years old, maybe, or something like that. We'll see him. We'll see him back up. And I'm a long way from that. Just to put that out there. So anyway.
All right, Padres Marlins.
Great talk, Kevin. We will do it again on. What, Friday from Chicago? We'll have to do it pretty early.
That's a early game. That's a you know, as if you care, anybody, but that's a late night flight and a early morning wake up call for 3 day games in Chicago. Cannot wait.
And I think it's only supposed. Well, the last time I looked, I think it's supposed to be 95 on Friday. So, and there's no roof. Unlike where you're going tonight, there's no roof on that place.
No, that'll be something, but it will be Wrigley Field, and I think it's okay then if I take my shirt off.
God, did we have to hear that? Thanks for listening, everyone. Right. We'll talk to you on Friday.
See ya.